What's the number one most preventable reason employees leave?
That career progression and work-life balance. Everybody, especially since COVID, just wants, they want to spend more time with their families. They want a better work-life balance, and there's plenty of opportunity out there for it. So you have to find that balance of you know, getting what you need, high-performing team, all that. But no, don't, if you start working people 55 and 60 hours a week these days, they will find another, they will take that message that I send them or that a recruiter sends them, and they'll say, let's talk. And that's where it starts. So work-life balance.
One of the things that we as owners have to know and understand is it's my child. Mm-hmm. This is my business is my fourth child. Everybody that I hire is never going to treat it and think of it the same way as
correct.
I do.
They'd have to get to a certain level.
They would. Like, but me as an owner, I have to temper my expectations and know that I can't bother Sierra on certain things on whatever day. Mm-hmm. If she's gone, I need to let her be gone.
Correct.
Sometimes I don't, but like I'll say this, and she's laughing back there. Sometimes I just will wait because I know that she's doing something or with somebody or whatever.
Yeah.
But then sometimes it's urgent and I want to commit. And sometimes I just got to shut up and just hold it to me.
Yeah.
But I think the more that owners can realize that the people that we hire are never going to treat it like we treat it, the better off we'll be.
I think that's a good way to look at it. And they still need to have kind of a career progression, even beyond the work-life balance. Nobody wants to stay in the same job more than 5 years.
But why? But that's so different than like, okay, give a great example.
Yeah.
The guy at the gym I'm great friends with, his wife has worked at a Birmingham company for 25 years. She's 48.
How much has she moved up?
She's moved up a pretty good bit. She does well.
That's what I'm saying. When I say I'm not saying they don't want to stay at the same company. I'm saying they don't want to stay in the exact same titled job.
They want to keep moving.
Everybody wants to keep moving in their career. Everybody wants to be a C-level, make more money and all that. So I'm not saying they need to be in a different job, but you got to be moving them up in some capacity, whether it's, even if it's just money.
Yeah.
But title, career progression, where are we going? What are we doing, Thomas? What's next after this? If you can kind of show them a path that they can move towards, that's when people get happy and give them some new training, spend some money on them.
Do you have so I've heard this a lot. I've heard, and I hate this, it drives me absolutely bonkers.
What?
Where people are like, this is what I do. I really don't do anything. I love it. Like my job is so easy. I just sit there and they pay me for this. I have to have a phone every now and again. I don't really do anything. I love it. I despise that.
Yeah.
Do you ever run into somebody and try to hire somebody and they're just like, I don't want to do that. It's too much work.
I can't remember an exact example, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure I probably have, but yeah, there's people out there that do just need a paycheck. And if
that's right.
And if there's nothing wrong with that, if that's what they want to do and the company's fine with what they're doing and how they're performing, then that is what it is. But I mean, that person can't really expect to move up, you know, and can't really expect to go far.
And you know what? Sometimes I don't think they do.
And that's fine if that's the goal, because it's all about being happy. And I mean, if just making a certain level of income is good and you get to have that great work-life balance, spend a lot of time with the family, maybe that's all somebody needs and that's perfectly fine.
Has the obsession with remote work actually made it harder for companies to grow?
So the companies don't really like it as much as the employees do. I mean, but it is definitely, there's enough opportunity out there where companies are going to have to consider it in their hiring process. Now, there's some industries, some companies where you have to be on site. You can't build a car remotely, right? So you have to be there with your hands on the car. So like, and if you're in that industry, you get it. It's not as big of a deal, but like in IT and companies where it's a computer-based service being provided or something like that, and you're not offering remote work, all of your competitors are, and they're gonna wind up getting your people at some point. Some people love on-site work. Most people love the remote flexibility more.
Are you seeing more in those types of jobs? Are you seeing, I'm gonna give you three options. Are you seeing more always in-house, always remote, or hybrid? What are you seeing the most of?
Hybrid is the And you know, not by a long, not by a big margin. I would say remote's probably second. And then the only reason the on-site, I see the 100%, you know, Monday through Friday on-site is because of the industry, like
because
we talked about.
Industry, yeah.
Other than that, it's hybrid and remote. The thing about fully remote is it opens up the entire country to your as a candidate pool.
Oh, that helps you.
Oh, gosh.
I came to you and said, I need someone to do this job. And, bro, I don't never need to see them.
Yeah.
You're like, sweet.
I got the whole country to work. Whereas hybrid, they've got to be local. So now I'm limited to the local population, which is fine. I've always believed. Anytime I get a job in Birmingham, I tell my clients there is somebody in Birmingham that can do this job. We shouldn't have to go fully remote as long as expectations in line. But if we go remote, I'm going to go find you A to Z. They're out there. I can go find you A to Z, culture fit if you need it, whatever. I can go find everything if you give me the whole country to work for.
You made the comment earlier that companies should treat recruiting like sales. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Time kills in recruiting, like it does in sales. That's the famous saying you hear in sales, time kills. So if you were in a sales role and the potential new client wanted to talk to you at 8 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock at night, you're going to talk to them at 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Sure.
That's what they ask for. Recruiting is no different. You are selling your company to a candidate. And if you let 2-3 weeks go by and you haven't moved the process, that candidate is going to lose interest or they're going to take another offer. So it's got to be time sensitive. It has to move quickly, especially in highly competitive IT jobs, accounting jobs right now. You have got to move quick.
Got to move fast.
And not only does it get, it shows the candidate that you can make decisions, that you're quick and agile, and there's not just a bunch of bureaucratic red tape in the way. And like if they come work for you, good grief, it took you a month to do the interview process. What's it going to be like when I work here?
Mm.
So there's an impression, a sort of feeling that you're setting with these candidates when you have your act together and you're moving and shaking and making offers and hiring people and just, this is going to be cool, they think.
Do more people want to be coached and led, or do more people want to be left alone?
Coached and led for sure.
Really?
You ask a software developer that, they're going to say, I just want to be left alone so I can so I can do my coding. But I mean, in general, the answer to that is always coached and mentored. Everybody wants to grow. Everybody wants to move up in their careers. And really the only way you can do that is if you have a really good manager, a really good coach, mentor to kind of show you what the next level looks like and take you there.
I'm not great at that. I told Sierra this. I just struggle with like coaching and training people.
You seem like you'd be great at it.
I think it is a patience thing, and I do struggle sometimes with leading people and training people into certain tasks because I have the belief of I want to hire people that are better than I am.
Yeah, it is a patience thing for sure.
It is a patience thing, but yeah. I also got to teach them this is how we've done it, and I'm fully open to how you want to do something a little bit different.
Yep.
What's the first move you'd make if a company lost its best employee tomorrow?
Well, hopefully they have a plan in place for that. But the first thing I would do is really get my arms around everything that person was doing. Because if he's their best, if he was the best employee, I guarantee he was doing more than one job.
Oh, sure.
So get your arms around everything that person was responsible for and determine at that point if it's one job or two jobs.
Mm.
I actually have a recent example that I'm working on now where there was a client of mine. I actually had an interview yesterday on this job, but there was a person there that was so important to the department that when he left, somebody threw some crazy number at him and he finally had to go. He'd been there a long time, but we started off trying to find his hybrid skill set, like this crazy two-pronged skill set. We couldn't find him, so we finally broke the job into two, hiring a developer,
person A and person B.
But so you got to know what all they were doing.
You got to have a job description.
You got to have a full picture of what all they were doing, because they were probably doing things outside their original job scope that you just never really noticed or whatever. Yeah, you got to really get your arms around that.
A year and 4 months into owning your own business.
Yes.
What does the next 12 months look like? What's the goal?
In most companies, the goal is to grow and to scale and to just, see how big we can make this thing. And ironically, that's not my goal. There's only so much bandwidth I have and so many clients I can support. And I want to work with clients that want to work with me. So my goal for the next 12 months is to really zero in on my best clients that love working with me and that we work well together and really focus on them so I can provide them with the service that I do best and not just chase every new customer new client that I can. I'm not really interested in that rat race that a staffing company can become.
Sure.
I just want to find me a good set of 30, 40, 50 clients that I can really do a good job for, because that's plenty of work. That's plenty for me. I'm not trying to make $100 million. I don't care. I want to find me a group of clients that I work well with.
Make good money. Make good money. Help people out.
That's
right. Be a great resource.
That's it.
Do you ever tell people no? Somebody calls you and says, I'm looking for this. And you're like, nah, bro. Can't help
it. It is tough, but yes, you have to. And that's where kind of what I'm talking about right now is that it may take an exploratory job to try it and be like, yeah, now that I've worked on this, I don't think I'm going to be the best person for this. That's okay, right? It allows you to focus on the ones that you are.
When a specific job comes across your desk, do you ever just look at the job and go, nope, can't help there?
Yeah. So it goes back to that one of those other answers. So if somebody doesn't have a digital presence for me to find them, I'm not going to be your person, right? And there are some staffing companies that are fantastic at the, we'll call it the blue collar stuff, where you know they may not have a digital presence. You got to bring 100 people in, you got to interview them in your office, and you got to say, I found 10 really good candidates. That's just not me. I need a digital presence for the job to be successful for me, like so that level of a person.
The job that you're looking for, that job has to have a digital presence out there in some way.
No, the candidate population has to have
Population.
I'm sorry. Yeah, the candidate population needs to have a digital presence because not everybody's on Facebook.
Give me an example
of LinkedIn
one, of a,
and all this stuff
of a pool that doesn't have that.
Everything has a candidate pool, but it's how big is it? I mean, if it's a small little sample size that I can reach out to, and other than that, I've got to start having all these in-office interviews. It's everything has a candidate pool out there, but if it's not big enough, I can't do it.
Yeah.
For example, you know, like the people that build cars, I said building cars earlier, like all the line workers, these highly skilled technicians that are building cars and everything, they're not Facebookers and LinkedIners and all this kind of stuff. So they're just hard to find unless I actually go down to the plant and park in the parking lot and start handing out business cards. There's no way to get them. Mm-hmm. There's no way to reach them. So that's all. It's not industry specific. It's not title specific. It's not seniority specific. But if these people don't have a digital presence, I have no way to find them.
You can't find them.
Yeah.
What was the hardest part about leaving a company and starting your own business?
The security of it, you know, I'm lucky my wife's a teacher, so we have great benefits, but the benefits were easy to walk away from. But just that, you know, in my case, in this specific case, the ability to sell a contract position, to go after contract positions, I walked away from that because I don't have the ability to float the payroll and do all that stuff. So
explain that. You explain that off camera. Explain that process and what that looks like.
So that roster that we talked about earlier, of 50 people, and they're, you know, you're paying them $50 an hour, billing $75 an hour. You've got to pay that person for weeks and
the
months.
The recruiting company.
Yes, the staffing company has to pay that person biweekly, and they're probably not getting the invoice paid for those hours for months. So if you get a roster of, you know, 50 people, you are floating millions of dollars of payroll before months.
Why does the company not pay you?
It just takes time. I mean, I know one client that we worked with forever, and they were a year in arrears. They were consistently paying invoices that were from 12 months ago.
So meaning, and you're saying those types of companies, you're meaning the big boys.
The big,
and I'm
yes.
going to I'm
yeah.
going to throw these companies yeah. out. I don't know if you work with them or not. So like a company the size of like a Southern Company or an AT&T or a just
big
a
company,
massive company.
Massive company, yes. And the risk, you know, for a large staffing company is that you're going to, like, if that company closed tomorrow, shut down, you're not getting a year's worth
of
hours. Wow. Which to that large staffing company, not a huge business ending deal for me. It would end me.
So you don't do the contract stuff.
No.
You do what did you call it? Single?
Direct hire. Permanent
direct
placement.
Hire, permanent placement.
Yeah. So it's just a single transaction. I do the job, send an invoice, they pay me, I'm on to the next one. There's no risk. There's no floating of payroll and all that kind of stuff. It's just, and there's enough of a need out there where that's all I need to do. I don't need to do contract.
So do you work more since having your own thing or less?
More, but differently. Like I spend a lot of nights at my computer doing my sourcing, which is the finding of the candidates. And sometimes I'll send the message out at night. Sometimes I'll wait in the morning and send it out. Depends on the job and the industry and a couple of things. But I spend different time. I play a lot of golf now, but I do a lot of my work.
You're able to be here at 10:30 in the
yeah.
morning.
Yeah.
Instead of sitting behind a desk at that the company requires.
I don't have all these meetings that I have to be a part of. I don't have all these metrics that I have to worry about. I can work on my time, my hours, and all that. But I definitely work more than I did before.
Yeah, I tell people this all the time. The freedom of having okay, so for example, I get to watch my son's football practices two or three days a week.
Yep. I got baseball players.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So my best friend plays professional baseball, and I just tell them all the time, I just do not enjoy baseball at all. But like the freedom of me being able to go, A, pick him up from practice,
yep.
B, watch the last 30 minutes of practice is wonderful. Because
yep.
in my previous jobs, I couldn't do that.
Yep.
And I hate to say this, but I missed the first three, 4 years of my daughter's life because I worked 75 hours a week for 10 years.
Yeah.
And the freedom of having your own thing is,
yeah.
I tell people all the time, I quit coaching, working 75 hours a week, had a brief stint in, I say, corporate America, a job.
Yep.
And then I got back into the 70, 75 hour a week deal. Mm-hmm. And probably only the last 3 or 4 years has the volume of work time went down.
Yeah. Because you've got your arms around it. You've got support staff around you. Everything's in place.
And what we learned a while ago is like to overhire a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. you know, employee one, whatever, employee five. I didn't really have to have employee five.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I needed to hire employee five because if I didn't, I would have to go to every single event that we had.
Yep.
And my kids are starting to play ball. And mm-hmm. I need to be home and just all things like that. But for example, like I used to do all the planning,
uh-huh.
all the pricing, and all the invoicing.
Yeah.
Well, we hired Emily. Emily's so much better at it than I am.
Yeah.
Sierra is so much better at things than I am.
Yeah.
And it's just like, hey, so, you know, because my number is still out there and people still call me about mm-hmm. stuff. And I'll talk to them and I'm glad to talk to them and glad to sell the thing. But like I just say, hey, you know what? Emily is our head of planning and she's so much better at this job than I am. And she's going to take care of you better than I am. So I'm going to let Emily go take you the rest of the way.
Yep.
And most of the time they're like, great.
Yeah.
Now, every time, every now and again, you're like, I want to talk to Thomas.
Yeah.
Emily will call and say, hey, we have someone that's dead set on talking to you. I'm like, okay, great. You know, whatever. I will do it.
Yeah.
But for the most part, my team is absolutely wonderful. Sierra makes the whole thing go. Emily does a wonderful job. Kristen does an amazing job. Bobby. I mean, we got a great team.
Yep.
And I wouldn't be able to do this and meet the people and do the things that I can do without those people.
Yep.
And so they're extremely valuable. So long term. So how old are you?
48.
48. So 48 years old. So long term, do you want to sell this thing at some point? Or is this, how does that work?
So the only thing of value with a staffing company, other than if you had a contract roster, that's worth money. If you could just inherit the billing of a roster of a whole staffing company, that has value. But for a direct hire permanent staffing company, the only thing that I have of value other than my skill and ability is the agreements, the paper that I have. But those agreements, like the agreement I have with MealFit, it's only as good as the relationship with the person. So there's not really anything for me to sell unless I'm going to work for the company that's buying me. Or unless I get some contract business, get this big book of business, which I'm not going to do. So no, the goal is not to sell it. The goal is to brute force my way to, you know, as many placements as I can for the next 10 years and hang it up.
Your wife's a teacher?
She is.
Does she help with the business at all?
Yeah, she does. You know, she does some back office, you know, accounting kind of stuff and operations kind of stuff. But the all of the service that's being provided is 100% me.
Tell me about your kids.
18 going into his senior year at Hoover.
Wow.
And 13 going into his last year of middle school at Simmons. So
that's awesome.
He'll be at the high school next year. The older one's going to Bama next year. And
they both play baseball.
They did. My older one made the JV team at Hoover and then that was his only year. He hung it up after that. And then my younger one is a big-time baseball.
Is he really?
Yeah.
So let's talk about U-Sports. U-Sports, y'all are in the travel, all the travel baseball and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Tell me about your thoughts and feelings on all that. This was not on the questions, by the way.
I mean, it's fun. We've made a lot of good friends.
Sure.
He's been on the same team for the last 5 years since I was – coaching it, but it's fun. We don't go crazy and like go to Texas and you know, California or anything crazy. I mean, we went to Charleston last year and that was earlier this year and that was about as big of a trip as we've ever been on. But usually we're in Tuscaloosa and
Montgomery
and stuff like that within an hour.
Albertville
within an hour. And it's fun and it's good baseball, but you know, he'll be at the high school next year and that'll all be over, so I'm enjoying it while I can.
Will they not do travel baseball when they get to high school?
They do. You get your summer league and kind of fall stuff, but when you get to high school, it should die down a little bit.
High school coach dominates all that.
Yeah, I mean, he'll probably line things up and for us and whatever, but once they get to high school, I don't need to do all the travel stuff. That's plenty of baseball. We'll get them in a summer league or a fall league around town, and that's it.
There's two thoughts about travel sports, and one is like super negative and one is super positive. And we have tried very, very hard to make that thing positive as we can.
Yep.
And I will say this is a tip for everybody out there that does travel sports, whether it's girls or boys, is stop staying in hotels and start staying in Airbnbs. And I say that because It is. You spend so much money. I mean, you're talking $1,000 to $5,000 per kid just to play the ball, play the sport, then the travel fees and going in here, staying here. But you spend so much money because you want your kid to be great and you love the community. When you do that, be comfortable where you're staying and treat them like mini vacations.
That's what we do. Charleston, we were in Airbnb. We usually do Vrbo. But
why? Why do you use the RBO?
Just because I want my house to myself. I want the house to myself. And we turned it into a little mini vacation and all that.
The whole Nick Saban thing of like, you know.
Airbnbs are fine. I got no problem with them. But if I can find what I need on Vrbo, I'm going Vrbo. If I can't, I go to Airbnb and see what's there.
We showed up, y'all, listen. So we showed up in Knoxville at a place. And then we showed up at like 10 o'clock at night. We had a thing the next day, and we showed up at like 9:30 or 10. And Jackie goes, who are those people?
It was the hosts?
No, it was another group that was staying on the downstairs. There was no access. They couldn't get to us. We couldn't get to them.
Yeah.
But it was like it's like a split-level house where the access was cut off. And we heard a baby down there.
So it was two units, and there was a baby downstairs. Oh, gosh.
It was not loud, but it was very uneasy for my family.
Yeah.
And honestly, I did not read the description very well.
Yes, I have been guilty of that myself.
And it's like, and, you know, for 30 minutes, my wife was upset, and I got mad because she was ungrateful. And,
yeah.
Because it was a great place. It just happened to be someone living downstairs that we never even saw.
Right down the staircase from.
Okay, so got two kids. They're both in baseball, or one's in baseball, one's fixed me a senior. That's pretty awesome. Where does your wife, she teach in elementary or high school?
She is an elementary art teacher. I will say that here in town. So she gets she gets K through six. I don't know if I should mention the school or not.
No, but it's fine. Don't worry.
She's
about
K through six art teacher. She's been doing it for 21 years.
That is incredible.
Yes, at the same school. So she's got 4 more years left.
The art teacher is always the usually the fun teacher.
Yep.
The fun teacher or the weird teacher?
Yeah.
We had one that was really fun, one that was really weird, but like they're really wonderful people.
Yeah.
So transitioning to that, so what do you do besides investing in your business? Where do you invest outside of your business financially?
I've got actually got two financial advisors right now.
Okay.
But, you know, just in various, you know, various things that they put me on and you know, tell
all
me about.
All market stuff, though?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much market stuff. You know, I've got my 529 plans are the best investment I ever made for my two boys, those college college funds.
Why do you like a 529?
I just started it the day they were born. I started it, and it's you know, as far as performance goes, whatever that 529 is in has just performed fantastically.
Wow.
both of them. So
that's really good.
You know, I'm not the best investor. That's why I have financial advisors point me to the right direction. But I remember at one point I was like, why don't you just find out what those are in, those 529s, and just put the rest of my money in there.
That's really good. Hey, look, you've been awesome. Did a great job. So
tell
everybody where they can find you if they need a need, because I know there's going to be somebody on here that is going to want to use you at some point.
My website's the best thing. I don't do Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff, but my website is www.recruit.org, but recruit is spelled R3CRUIT, R3Crute.org. So every way to reach me is out there on that website, and that's the best place you can go.
Website and LinkedIn, I would imagine you're extremely active on LinkedIn.
I'm on LinkedIn too, so you can reach me there too. That's a good point. Thank you.
Good. That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.